Chapter 7. A Hot Day. It was a hot day in southern Ontario. The week had been the hottest on record for September. In the biosphere, the giant air conditioning units were working overtime to keep up, especially in the Arctic Dome. The seals and the polar bears were spending most of their time in their aquariums, separated by a strong glass wall, as their artificially created snow had melted completely. On that first day of the semester, many of the university students were talking about the heat. "It's not much better in here than it is out there," one student complained, wiping sweat from his forehead. "It's 14 degrees better," the professor replied, having already checked the indoor and outdoor temperatures. "Then it must be 50 degrees out there," a female student estimated. "We should get another day off to go to the beach, just to survive." The professor chuckled. "No, it's only 37 degrees outside," he told her. "If it was 50, the university would be shut down and we would all be in danger of heat stroke and death." He then launched into his favorite side issue. "This is our world," he told the 200 students sitting in his class. "This is one of the life-threatening problems that you will need to address in the future. Our world is spinning out of control. The extremes of temperature are just one indicator of all that is going wrong with our planet. Due to excessive pollution, fossil fuel emissions, and irresponsible stewardship, we have brought many of these problems on ourselves. We need to do all we can to turn our world around, or future generations may not be able to survive." A red-haired student put up his hand. "Yes," Professor LeMans acknowledged. He didn't know everyone's name just yet. It was only the first day of Foundations in Molecular Biology and Genetics 101. "Isn't it God's world, sir?" the young man asked. A light sarcastic laugh escaped the professor and rippled across the classroom. "God's world?" the professor repeated, his dark eyebrows raised in a skeptical fashion. "Surely if there was a God, then he would be doing a much better job controlling the conditions of this planet. The environmental conditions of the last 20 years indicate to me there is absolutely no higher being watching over us. Or if there is," he mumbled to himself, "he doesn't care much about his creation." The arm of the redhead went up again. "Yes," nodded the professor. "But sir, as you said, it's man's irresponsible stewardship that is to blame for many of the life-threatening problems that we face. And God has promised to intervene in the future to make things right." "Well, when he gets around to intervening, perhaps a few more will join his cause," the professor acknowledged. Seeing a number of hands go up, the professor decided to terminate the discussion. "I highly recommend my book on this subject," he said. "There are a few copies of Faith or Fact, An End to Delusion in the Rainforest Library, and plenty of other very helpful resources on this topic. Make good use of them. A good scientist doesn't ever allow bias to cloud his investigations. He explores all the evidence before making any conclusions." "I've read it," another student piped up proudly. "It's good. Scientists make decisions based on evidence, not faith," he scoffed. Just one second," Seth argued. "Faith is based on evidence." "Not according to my dictionary," the professor retorted. Having Googled the word faith, he read the definition. "A belief not based on proof." A female student put up her hand. "When I Google faith, Cambridge Dictionary says a high degree of trust or confidence in someone or something." Seth nodded. "The Bible defines faith as persuasion," he stated. "Faith is a well-grounded assurance of that for which we hope and a conviction of the reality of things which we do not see." "Ooh la la, I've never heard of that definition," the professor laughed. "Did you make it up?" "It's the Weymouth translation of Hebrews 11 verse 1, Seth smiled. "If you look up the actual meaning of the Greek words, it's even stronger." "Sir," Seth pleaded, "we all see and evaluate the same evidence. Some believe the evidence happened by chance, however improbable that may be, while others see the evidence as proof for an intelligent creator. There is a measure of faith required whether you believe in creation or evolution. Neither theory can be fully proven by scientific experiment, so both are better described as theories of history, not science." "Enough of this," the professor frowned. "We're all here today," he stated, "to take a look at the remarkable abilities of the cell to divide and reproduce. Continuing on without any further interruptions, the professor began the new university semester sharing some of the remarkable discoveries and advances by researchers all over the world. He was teaching a very important foundational course, one that would lead many of his students on to various scientific careers. It was a long, hot, sweaty day that first day back, and the professor wasn't used to teaching full-time. In the last 4 years, he had taken a lighter load of classes to give himself more time to research and build Paradise. Now that his new world was up and running, he had resumed a full teaching schedule. Evan was also very busy, hoping to finish his master's degree in 3 semesters. They met at 4 o'clock in the Reptile Cafe to check on the tinies. The professor was pleased to see that Bert was basking on a rock near the waterfall while the turtles lazed in the water. Timbo had been shipped to the pet store. "How have you survived the day?" Evan asked as they walked along the mirrored hall. Howler monkeys and the noisy macaw called out to each other from their well-designed habitats. "I hear this heat wave will break tonight with a bank of thunderstorms moving in." "That's a relief," the professor sighed, wiping sweat from his forehead. Instinctively, he looked around to ensure they were alone in the hallway. "Did you get my message?" Evan asked, automatically doing the same check as he pulled out his cell phone to press the green arrow. Patting the pockets of his white lab coat, the professor suddenly realized his phone was missing. "Ah, no, I did not," he replied. "Maybe I left my phone in the Paradise room this morning. Sure hope it's not at home." "Oh, routines," he sighed as they both positioned themselves on the drop square. "It takes a while to readjust." As soon as Evan pressed the green arrow app, the 4 dropped away below their feet. Evan and the professor were lowered quickly down to the heavy metal door. "I have a question concerning the rate of mutation based on radiation damage," Evan said, as the professor typed in the code on his door. "I know there's a fine balance between the amount of DNA damage and repair versus the death of the cell. What have you found in your research?" The professor launched into a detailed reply as he and Evan walked through the empty nurseries and took the elevator up. He stepped into his private room, housing the newly functioning dome terrarium. "Whew, it's hot in here," Evan remarked. With a jolt, the professor noticed that Paradise looked quite wilted inside. For a moment, he didn't see any of the children anywhere. In a panic, his eyes raced to the lake. And with relief, he saw many heads in the water with Louie. The animals were lying along the shallow shoreline. Racing to the side panel, he checked the conditions inside. The temperature displayed 45 degrees Celsius inside the dome. In the large glass Paradise room, the temperature had climbed to 40. "Salors," the professor called up fearfully. "This is not supposed to happen. Check the air conditioning unit." Without a word, Evan rushed to the computer desk and took a seat in the big padded chair. "Why didn't Louis message me that things were this bad?" the professor expressed anxiously as he pressed the blue button on the wall to engage the Raymaker and then the white button to do an immediate and complete air exchange. "Your phone, sir?" Evan reminded him, hastily entering the important password 0Suffering66 to check the controls. "Right. Who would have thought there'd be an emergency on the very first day?" Evan began troubleshooting, searching the main computer control system. Little voices were coming through the microphone and over the speakers as the anxious professor ran over to view the lake. He wanted to ensure all the living creatures had made it to the water. Since they were in a group and he could only see heads, it was hard to discern who was talking. "So hot," a little voice said, which sounded like Yu Yan. "When can we get out of the water, Uncle Louie? Will it be hot like this every day?" "I want to go back to the nursery. I don't like the sun. I want it to go away. I don't want to do swimming lessons any longer." He was sure the voice was Amy's. "I'm hungry. When can we get food?" He was almost certain this came from Zaheer. "Does the professor want us to be this hot?" The last question startled the professor as he counted all the heads bobbing above the surface. "Do I want them to be this hot?" he reiterated to himself in utter disbelief. He wasn't sure who asked the question, but he imagined it was Ponzi or Odin, or maybe even Franz. In his mind, he thought, "They have no idea how hard I've worked to ensure that Paradise is perfect." "Yeah," Odin added. "Are you sure he knows what's going on? Or is he doing this on purpose?" Inside Paradise, sitting in the lake with all the children, Louie responded quickly. "Definitely not on purpose. Professor loves us. Let's be thankful that he gave us all this water to keep cool. Santa's voice piped up. And we should be thankful to Lima and Franz for telling us to come in here. Yes, Uncle Louis acknowledged gratefully. This was an excellent idea, boys. This is the place to be on a hot day. It's always the place to be, someone cried out. Swallowing hard, the professor counted the animals he could see lying along the shallow shoreline. He was furious with himself for not inspecting his controls on his lunch break. He had been so confident that everything was working as it should. He hated to see any kind of suffering in his beautiful world, and if even one of the tinies had died as a result of this malfunction, he knew he'd be totally devastated. Anxiously, he also considered that if the public ever found out about this system failure and the length of time he had taken to respond, his hopes of continuing on as the guardian of paradise could be dashed. Having determined that all of the living creatures had found their way to the cooling water, Jack Slamans hurried over to see if Evan had found a glitch in the program. On top of all his worries and concerns, his heart ached that some of the tinies were questioning his motives. How could any of them think that I wanted this to happen? He asked Evan quietly. Ah, there are only a couple that do, Evan assured him, his eyes scrutinizing the data scrolling by in the main computer screen. They are just kids. They have no idea how much intensive research and effort has gone into making their world absolutely perfect. Louis's patient voice was still responding to the children's complaints. Just a little longer till things cool down. When it starts to get dark, it will cool down for sure. Then we'll all go and see what we can make for dinner. Tell me what you're hoping for. I think I found the problem, Evan called out. There is an error message on the heat transfer unit. I'll try a reset. Merci beaucoup, Jax exclaimed with a sigh of relief, as the raindrops slowly crept over the hills in the north and the air exchanger knocked the temperature down one whole degree. He noticed the edge of his phone under a research paper. Picking it up, he saw there were 5 messages from Louis, all warning of the intense heat and asking for help. Poor Louis. I must have really let him down today, the professor mused quietly, walking over to the dome to look in. The reset worked, Evan whispered loudly. Likely it was a system overload, he replied softly. I guess we'll need to keep a better eye on the controls should we reach extreme temperatures again. Let's sync my phone to the controls as well as yours, Evan suggested, keeping his voice low. You should have done this from the beginning. Jack Slamans didn't disagree. It was a completely unfortunate oversight. As Evan worked on syncing his phone, the Rainmaker reached the lake. It was the first time the children had seen rain. The wonder of little drops of water falling across the lake and landing on their heads quickly distracted them from the heat. They tried to catch it. They tilted their heads back to feel it fall into their mouths. They laughed and held up their hands. And Georgia was the first one to spot a rainbow. Look in the sky, she shouted. Those are the most beautiful colors, and it's right over our hill, girls. It's a rainbow, Uncle Louis told them. The sunlight is refracting through the water droplets in the air. Let's go find it, Zaheer shouted, charging out of the lake, his dark wet curls bouncing against his drenched shirt and spraying water in all directions. Frito, his golden-haired dog, bounded after him. Vahid and Milan followed close behind. With that, most of the children raced toward the beach in search of the elusive bow. Louis let them run, knowing the professor was now responding to the emergency. Already, he could feel the cooler air coming in. The rain collected on the plateau and began cascading down the rock cliff. Evan and the professor chuckled as the awestruck children marveled at the stream of water falling down the rock face. They watched them sprint along the riverbed, following the gurgling brook racing toward the lake. The dreadful heat was soon forgotten as the plants began to revive and the beauty of rain refreshed the new world. Look, Santa called out to Charlie, with her hands around some nodding pansies. The flowers are bright and cheerful again. They look so beautiful when they're happy. Children love the rain, Evan observed, watching Amy, Zaheer, and Georgia prance around in the waterfall as it cascaded down the rocky cliff. Maybe we should program the Rainmaker to come on once a week during the day. Ah, it'll just be an inconvenience, the professor replied, shaking his head. Any towels or laundry they've hung out to dry will get wet. Once in a while, rain might be fun, but I'd rather leave it set for the night hours. While Evan didn't fully agree, he said no more. He didn't feel it was an important issue.